Welcome to Hubbub, the People's Podcast, where we engage our citizens and investors with the activities of the Planning and Code Administration and encourage everyone to contribute to Hagerstown's growth.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Hubbub Podcast. I'm Donnie Harkham. I'm here with my wonderful co-host, Mr. Paul Falk. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Still waiting on that hair and makeup. I don't have much hair, but
yeah.
I'll be all right right
yeah.
now.
You know,
sorry for the glare.
It's just not in the budget right now, okay? So, but no, we appreciate everybody tuning in. If you're watching us online or on TV, wherever you are, we appreciate it. So, you know, each month we strategize on, you know, how the topic will be discussed or what topic we're going to be discussing. And this month we strategized about strategies, specifically demolition and strategic demolition.
That's a very good point, Donnie. You know, strategic demolition, you know, what is actually strategic demolition? And this demolition can kind of be classified in two ways. One is by demolishing blight in a community that you might have a blighted structure, maybe a couple blighted structures in a certain area. You demolish those to try to lift up the rest of the community by demolishing that blight. And then another way is by through some sort of economic development, revitalization to do some job creation where you're demolishing large sections of an area to actually bring up the whole community as a whole, maybe with a new development. So both of those have a very good impact in the overall community.
That's some good information, but let's rewind a little bit. Just talk about demolition in general. So can anyone demolish a property, you know? And the answer is yes and no. If you own the property, you know, you can do, you know, you have the rights to do what you'd like with that property. But there are, you know, there are some caveats to that, such as if you're in a historic district or it's listed as a landmark site, you might not be able to obtain the proper approvals to perform this demolition. If you demolish the property without proper approval, you could be facing some hefty fines or even court costs. And as we say each time in the podcast, make sure you check with your local jurisdiction to check to see maybe you are in a historic district and you didn't know. Maybe you just recently purchased a property and you don't know if you are in one of those historic districts or a landmark site. It is something to look into for sure.
And Donnie has a real good point, because here in Hagerstown, we do have historic districts and we do have properties identified as landmarks. So that is something that you would want to make sure you look into. For example, if you were here in Hagerstown, you need to have a certificate of appropriateness or a certificate of hardship just to show that you can demolish a property in a historic district. Now, there are hearings that are held for these through our Historic District Commission that you are actually making an application to demolish a property in a historic district or as a landmark. Then what they'll have is that these are public meetings. People can obviously attend those. You can always voice your concern if you were upset about this potential historic property being demolished. And the board can take that into consideration for that, but there's criteria that has to be met. And it's just because a person applies does not actually mean they're going to be granted the demolition permit to demolish a historic property. They still have to go through the process. There are rules and regulations that the board are following to make sure criteria is being met to actually demolish the property. So it's not just you apply, you get to demolish it, it's just a paper trail type of a thing. No, that's not the case. There have been demolitions turned down by our local board that will not allow a historic property to be demolished. Now, if there actually is an approval for demolishing a historic property, there could be caveats put in there by our local board that is saying that certain architectural features or certain aspects of the building has to be preserved and reused in the new building. You can see this in other communities, and you can see it here in Hagerstown, most recently with the Maryland Theater Project. Our Maryland Theater had the McBear property that was located, if you're looking at the front of the building to the left of where the little courtyard area was, where the box office used to be located, that was called the McBear property. It did get the Certificate of Hardship and Appropriateness to be demolished, but the board made caveats in there that they had to preserve certain architectural features out of that building and reuse it in the new. So there are actually stained glass windows that were above the old entry windows on the first floor that had to be taken out of the McBear property. And then if you look at the new Maryland Theater on the front, on the left-hand side at the very top are those old stained glass windows. So it was actually being preserved and took aspects of that building. They're being reused in the new building, and it's kind of neat when you look at it. You can kind of see that that area has those old stained glass windows, and actually it's part of the fire escape out of that upper floor. One of the other things is that also, even though it might be in a historic district, if there's an emergency situation and the building needs demolished, you know, forbid if it was even some sort of catastrophic event that caused significant damage to a property, then we can order a property down due to just the safety concerns. The chief code official can go out and make an evaluation of it. We work with a structural engineer to determine if the building does need to come down or not, just based on the conditions or the site issues that were happening there. So, you know, demolishing of a historic property is not prohibited in Hagerstown. You just have to go through the proper approvals to have that happen. And that's just a way to preserve some of our historic structures in Hagerstown, as in other communities.
And I love that we have that board and those commissions to take both sides of this, because there are two sides to every story when it comes to these demolitions, and you want to make sure that the history is preserved and everything is done in a safe manner. So what if you're not in a historic district? Can you demolish a structure? Yes, you can demolish a structure, but you will need proper permits in place. Typically, a building permit or demolition permit is required in most communities across the country. This includes any accessory structure, such as a shed or a garage. Something to note is that if the structure is non-conforming and you are seeking demolition of the structure, the non-conforming use may not be permitted at that location anymore. In Hagerstown, we do permit the legal non-conforming use to continue at the site, given that the new structure meets all setback, parking, and landscape requirements, and that the period has not elapsed. So why are these permits needed exactly? For a primary structure or home, the local permits office is ensuring that the footers and the foundations have been removed below the frost lines. So this is when redevelopment occurs. There are no existing conditions that contend with that construction. There are also inspecting the water and sewer lines and to confirm that they've been properly capped so no contaminants do not enter the utility systems. And for those accessory structures such as garages or sheds, this identifies where the structure is located. And if the new structure is desired to go back in a similar footprint, this may be allowed for the new structure to meet currently adopted setback requirements. And, you know, it's not always the case, but it may allow that. And so are structures being demolished because it seems, you know, more and more structures are being built? Last year in Hagerstown, there were 21 structures demolished. Since 2010, we've had 174 structures demolished. And in the city of Baltimore, over 200 structures were demolished in 2019. So there's some stats for you for some demolition here locally in surrounding communities.
That is interesting because, as you mentioned, that you have a lot of properties that are, or a lot of structures that are being built, but you don't always realize that ones are being demolished unless you actually are, you know, living or working in that particular area. You just don't realize one has been removed from the community. I'm surprised on how large the number actually was that was removed since 2010 or even just last year. That was kind of surprising to hear. You know, so let's get back to the strategic demolition that what we're talking about today. Now, you know, this might seem like a new term or something that people have never heard before, but, you know, blight and strategic demolition has been around for quite some time. That, you know, urban renewal projects back in the 1950s and 60s would use the term blight, and they were used as large-scale infrastructure redevelopment projects that they would use in areas. Now, in the 1960s, there was a federal model cities program that was established to ensure that these programs did not target demographics and neighborhoods to try to eliminate them from certain neighborhoods. And then the 21st century approach of strategic demolition was massaged during the Great Recession, which was not that long ago, actually, less than 20 years ago when we were having the Great Recession, that, you know, that cities actually evolved some to target how are you going to address these vacant properties in their communities. They had things such as land banks that were created and also receivership or tax sale programs just to try to address these vacant properties and how that they could be addressed by either demolishing them or finding some sort of redevelopment purpose for them.
No, that's some really good information there. I didn't know much about the strategic demolitions before this episode, and you know, it's neat hearing about how some of this has come about. So one of the more common areas to revitalize areas with large scale demolitions is public housing. Hagerstown was able to benefit from strategic demolition in 2001. The HOPE 6 grant was obtained by the Hagerstown Housing Authority and was able to transform the distressed area. The existing buildings were demolished and replaced with 352 new homes and now known as Gateway Crossing. The design integrated the new community into the surrounding neighborhood and single-family homes. Landscaping, street lighting, and sidewalks were installed to provide a pedestrian-friendly environment. A unique feature of the development was a brand new 20,000 square foot Elgin Station Community Center that was designed to resemble an old train station. Baltimore is going through a very similar project right now. The Housing Authority of Baltimore City is demolishing 586 homes to construct new and improved units. That started last year in the fall, and it's expected to be completed by 2023.
That's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting on how we have in our community to benefit from some of these types of projects that we're talking about, that you just don't realize that it is strategic demolition or strategic redevelopment of those areas through demolition. You know, but one of the things that is very challenging is how do local jurisdictions actually get the money to do this type of stuff? You mentioned how the Housing Authority got the grant to build those items in Elgin Station, which I always love talking about because that's part of my family is the Elgin name. So I really like that Elgin Station area. So just how do they get these funds? That is one of those things that you just don't realize where does the money actually come from. Last month, actually, the U.S. Treasury Department created an avenue for people to be able to use $350 billion of the pandemic relief funds to actually use for demolition and other related urban revitalization projects. So that is a lot of money that's making available to people, or to jurisdictions, I should say, for them to be able to utilize that money. One of the biggest struggles is with these jurisdictions obtaining money is to just demolish the properties themselves. Now, everything varies from which community you actually live in, but here in Hagerstown, we can have a demolition cost approximately on the low end around $10,000, which is generally for a wood frame construction home, maybe one or two stories, to up to $25,000 for a single family home, because that could be actually with some brick, it could be also some stone or some other different unique aspects of plaster, and just removal cost alone can cost some money. So that can put strains actually on a small community such as Hagerstown. If we had four properties we needed demolished, then we're looking at $100,000 right there just to demolish a few properties in our community. So it is difficult for those such as Hagerstown to always have funding available to demolish. Now, we're going to be looking into the pandemic relief funds just the same as other communities are now that we've been made aware of this funding being available. And, you know, we always recognize that vacant and abandoned properties in a community, it does threaten the quality of life for people, for you to just live in your community. And also it can affect our brick and mortar stores that have to be near any of these types of properties. Hagerstown has secured some funding. We're just working on finalizing some of the details. We do have about $1.1 million right now that we're probably going to be able to use to demolish or revitalize some of our vacant, derelict, abandoned properties in Hagerstown. So that's something we've been working on very hard to try to obtain this funding. And we're happy that we're able to get some of it for us to use.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, we can have all the ideas in the world on what we want to do, but the funding's not there. You know, it's dead in the water, essentially. And, you know, some of the jurisdictions that were most affected since the Great Recession were hubs such as Flint, Michigan, Detroit, and Cleveland. You know, in 2014, Detroit established a blight removal task force. And what this was, it was a plan that identified 80,000 structures and vacant lots, with about 50% of them in need of demolition. In Flint, Michigan, they created a comprehensive plan that listed 20,000 homes, businesses, and vacant lots that were in serious neglect and that needed demolished, with an estimated cost of $100 million. These struggles, you know, they're just not in the country's older industrial cities, but also in growing communities such as California, Arizona, Nevada, and Texas. These local jurisdictions had to address blight in a way that they've never had to before and can be taxing on the local agencies. And when stable communities are affected by neglect and a building goes vacant, needing attention or demolished, this can be a staggering issue for local code enforcement officials to abate derelict properties, remove graffiti, and clean up vacant lots. Last month's episode, we covered how cities can abate these types of conditions. It can be a lot of work if this is just, falling into your lap. If you finally got the money, now you need the resources to start taking care of those.
Mm-hmm. And that's a real good point, Donnie. And that is a big misconception with the vacant properties, whether or not the structure's there or the land, is that the government owns it. It's a vacant property that no one, it's just the government. They're the ones that actually own this property. And that's not the case. For example, like Flint, you had mentioned that Flint, Michigan, they have land bank that does purchase vacant properties in their communities, but it's not every vacant property in their community. They estimate about one out of every three of vacant properties in Flint, Michigan are actually owned by the land bank. So it's not every single vacant property, and they have a large amount of funding and resources available to them to actually acquire them. Now, here in Hagerstown, we're not left alone with this assumption that because it's vacant, it's owned by the government. That is not the case. Most of Hagerstown's properties that we own are the ones that our offices are actually located in. It is not just some properties in town that are vacant. We own very few. It's just a handful that are like that. Now, some citizens are very adamant with us that we own that property, and we try to always educate and explain that, we do not own that property, that it is still the person that owned the structure that had left a home or went to a bank or whatever scenario may be. And like we mentioned, that unfortunately, it just takes time and money for us to be able to address these blighted vacant properties or lots in our community. It can be just a small project, but in a small community like Hagerstown, it could be a big impact on our funding.
Yeah, absolutely. And something that a lot of people may not think that is strategic demolition are like stadium projects. So, for example, the Baltimore Ravens Stadium, that site there was previously the site of William Nabe and Company Piano Factory, which they closed during the Great Depression and was demolished by the Maryland Stadium Authority in 1990. The original cupola, I don't know if I'm saying that right, it was preserved and is located in the Locust Point Industrial Area in Baltimore. A Maryland National Guard helicopter actually had to move it to its current location. A sidewalk keyboard mosaic is on the southwest corner of the stadium that honors the company's legacy, which is really cool. The Pittsburgh Steelers chose to demolish Three River Stadium by implosion to construct their current stadium, Heinz Field. A fun side note, I was actually at the last Pittsburgh Pirates game at Three River Stadium, so I followed that one closely whenever I was a little bit younger. When they did that implosion, is pretty neat. And something to note is that the city of Hagerstown does not permit implosions or mass demolitions in our community. So if you're thinking you'd like to see this in Hagerstown, you probably won't. So the city of Hagerstown is going to benefit from a stadium development project with the demolition of a number of structures in our community to construct a multi-use sports and events facility. In October 2021, the Maryland Stadium Authority authorized use up to $59.5 million in bonds to finance the acquisition, design, construction, and related expenses to construct that facility here in Hagerstown. And in addition to serving as the home of a new team in the Atlantic League, the facility is being designed to host other sports, cultural, and community events. So we're seeing this here locally. It does happen all over the country, but it is neat seeing that here in Hagerstown as well over the next couple of years.
That is going to be nice. The stadium project is going to be something very unique here in Hagerstown and looking forward to it. I know Donnie enjoyed mentioning about Baltimore Ravens Stadium project here as he is not a fan of the Ravens.
There's a reason I didn't expand on that.
So, is the demolition though always a solution to these types of scenarios? And it could be where arguments can be made where it doesn't always solve the issue for demolishing properties. And we're not here to advocate one way or the other. We're just pointing out where you want to look at things as overall community.
You know, when citizens in a community or elected officials argue that, you know, demolition doesn't always eliminate the blight. When you choose to actually renovate a property and getting the property into the hands of someone else that can actually stabilize an area and preserves the architecture and character of the community. One of the things that we always say with the vacant structure program we have here in town is that, you know, if we're able to just keep the pressure applied on a property owner to maintain the property to a minimum standard here in town, that if they choose that they're just going to sell it because they're unable to expense those funds to keep it to that standard, then if a property being in a new owner's hands is always better maybe for the community than it was in the previous owner's hands. And maybe they'll do that renovation project that the neighbors have always been wanting. And again, it keeps that architecture that doesn't really get built nowadays that is actually in your community, especially when you have an older community like ours here in Hagerstown. You know, and others always warn too that it doesn't spell the end of a problem by demolishing the property. As we discussed, you know, code enforcement staff is very strained to deal with vacant properties. And then once the property is demolished, now it becomes a vacant lot. You know, the code enforcement staff still has to deal with a vacant lot. Just because the owner didn't maintain the property or neglected the property during the time period that the structure was there, it doesn't mean that they're actually going to maintain that lot now when the home's been demolished. Now the code enforcement staff still have to deal with the vacant lot. So they're going out, addressing the lot that doesn't need mowed, that people dump things on the lot that needs cleaned off of it. So just because the property has, or just because the structure has been demolished, doesn't mean that the property is now in compliance. It just creates new issues that might have to be addressed by the local enforcement office. And here in Hagerstown, we do have things that are what we call our no-bid tax sale properties. We may have actually demolished a property to eliminate the hazard in the community of the structure falling down, but now it's a no-bid tax sale, meaning that no one bids on the properties when they go to tax sale because maybe liens that were placed against it or just because the owner walked away and didn't pay any of the taxes. But it's still something that the city has to address with, you know, dealing with the issues that are going on with that community. And then also we have to agree that, you know, the demolishing of the property doesn't always help our office at all, that sometimes we're always dealing with the issue well after the fact of the property being demolished. We've had homes that have been demolished since my time here for about 20 years that we are still mowing those lots, that the homes have not, the property has not turned over to anyone else. And then also the argument can be made that, you know, demolishing the property could have been renovated to maybe deal with some of the housing shortages that we have in this country. So some jurisdictions do have things in place where people are not allowed to demolish a structure just because they want to. For example, you have the former CEO of Yahoo. So, you know, money's probably not an object for them, that they could probably spend any money they need to try to make an argument. But they have property in Palo Alto, California, that they have an adjoining properties that they own that has about 3 or 4 townhomes on it that they are not able to demolish because they have a local ordinance in place that they cannot demolish the properties to put something in place that was no gain to the housing shortages that they have. The former CEO wants to demolish these townhomes so they can build a swimming pool back in its place, and that is not something that the Palo Alto says is going to be able to benefit the community with their housing shortage that they have. So they have a Housing Accountability Act in California that where there's no net loss of homes in their area, that it makes or how it creates a more of a housing crisis for that community, meaning that they can't demolish a home unless a home's going back in its place. So that's way they can address the housing shortages that they have in their community by not creating more of a housing shortage.
That is wild. When you first told me about that story about the former Yahoo CEO not being able to do that, it's just like, wow. You know, it's there are those things in place that limit those options. So. You know, and there could be lengthy discussion on what is best for a community, demolition or rehab. You know, those are options that we have. And we've seen it here in our community where we've benefited from that. And we are looking forward to the future where, you know, we get to use those funds to move forward with some of these projects. So that was a good episode. But now we're moving on to the weird news story of the month. So this month, we got, the title of this article was Demolition Crew Accidentally Knocks Down Wrong House on Dallas Street. And they said,
we made a mistake. So this one started out, the crew showed up to the wrong house. This house, you know, they started the demolition, and it was a nearly 100-year-old house with tons of World War II artifacts inside and some other sentimental items. Fortunately, this house wasn't being lived in. It was vacant for years, so it was a blighted property that looked ready to be demolished, and that's where the confusion came in, where the real one that needed demolished was right around the corner. So it's one of those crazy things, a huge mix-up. Mm-hmm. The contractor said in all their years working, they've never had this happen. I wouldn't hope so, but there's a first time for everything, I guess.
That does seem funny that in their first time doing that, and you do hear those stories across the country sometimes where the wrong structure was demolished. I guess those can happen. Sometimes you send crews out and you don't verify that.
Yeah, unfortunately, these crews, if when done correctly, they do go through the house, make sure nobody is inside, make sure they do get their permits to... Well, maybe these guys didn't get their permits, and it's one of those things of importance. You know, if they would have gotten their permits, maybe they would have had correct house numbers and all of that. So fortunately, nobody was hurt in this one, and it was already a vacant house. So I don't know.
Well, leading in like we always do, what are we going to talk about next episode here? So this is actually tiny homes, so we're going to talk about those. And, you know, how small can they actually be, and where can they go in your community? It seems like an oxymoron, but the tiny home community is actually a very large community that people are very into about living small now versus living in large homes. So can they actually be permitted? And how do the codes actually get involved with this type of stuff? You know, do codes even address tiny homes? So we'll go over that next episode.
Yeah, that's going to be a good episode. I recently got on this YouTube kick of watching some of these tiny home videos, and just it's amazing what people can do in these small structures. I never would have thought that existed or people would actually want this, but it is a lifestyle that people are into. So.
Right.
And speaking of YouTube, make sure you're checking us out on YouTube. You can search for us by searching for the Hubbub Podcast or PCAD, City of Hagerstown. We're also on all your favorite social media platforms. We're on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We recently launched our, I guess not so recently, you know, coming up on close
half a year.
Yeah. Our short video platforms on Instagram Reels and on TikTok. We're gaining quite a following on there. And also for the podcast, I know I mentioned you can find us on YouTube, but you can find us on all other major podcast platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor. And while you're out there, make sure you're giving us a rating on Apple Podcasts. That just allows other people to find us and all of our awesome educational material. All right, so as we wrap up this month's episode, we got our musical guest. This month's guest is Mac Berry. So Mac Berry, he actually began taking piano lessons at the age of 3, and he won the 2019 Teens Have Talent competition from the Washington County Free Library and the Maryland Theater. He's a true local talent. He leads worship at the New Creation Church here in downtown Hagerstown. He also teaches home piano lessons, so it kind of went full circle of him taking piano lessons. Now he's a teacher. And he's also in a band called Full Effect. He writes and records original songs, his local appearances, and on top of all that, he does have a YouTube channel. So I could probably go on and on about everything he is involved with, but we'd be here all day. So in the description of the podcast, we will link to his social media pages and where you can find all of his music. If you want to go check him out live, he will be performing at the Prohibition Hub on February 23rd from 7 to 10. He's performing at the Axe Black Box on March 5th from 7 to 10. And then he'll be at Blue Mountain Winery from 1 to 4. So now, as we end our episode, we'll listen to some Mac Berry to take us out. Thank you all for listening.
Blinked out from my eyes. The midday sun is black with smoke. The sky. My city.